to Book Hype. This is Hypeable's book podcast, and it's our very first one. It's been a long time in the making. For any of you who've been around reading Hypeable, you know we've talked about a bookcast for probably the last year, and it's taken this long to get it off the ground. But I'm Jen, and I'm joined by several other Hypeable members. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Tark. I got introduced to Hypeable via the Hypeable forums. I built those. They're kind of dead right now, so if you want to take a look, you can, you know, go have fun over there. I also am a viral writer, so we write original content along with Marima, and I am on a bunch of podcasts, including Vampire Hype, This Sorkin Series, and Who Hype.
I'm Marima. I'm a viral writer like Tarek, so doing original content, and I'm also covering The Newsroom and more recently the Lizzie Bennet Diaries for Hypeable. And I also do Sorkin Series with Tarek.
My name is Michal, and I cover The Big Bang Theory, Downton Abbey, and The Legend of Korra / anything Avatar The Last Airbender related. And yeah, oh, and I contribute to the literature section on Hypeable.com.
And I'm Karen. I'm one of the editors for the site, and I also cover Percy Jackson and Teen Wolf News. Also a viral writer, and I'm on the Onceable podcast with Jen and on the Not Another Teen Wolf podcast.
All right, great. And I'm Jen, as I said before, and I just do the books at Hypeable. That's about all I do. And I do Once Upon a Time podcast as well. Oh, and Who Hype? Yeah, that too. I'm on more podcasts than I am on writing sections, but the book section's kind of big, so I think that's okay. And as everyone on the podcast mentioned, almost all of them have contributed and continue to contribute to the book section in some way or another, and that's why we're all here together to talk about books. So I think the first thing we should talk about is kind of what we've been reading right now, because there's so many great books out there, and I think we all have very different tastes or varied tastes in books. So what are you guys reading right now? Tarek, what are you reading?
I am one of those guys who reads like more than one book at once, and so right now I'm currently reading I'm about to start Insurgent, which is the second book in the Divergent trilogy. I'm excited for that. And I'm also in the middle of the first book of A Song of Fire and Ice by George R.R. Martin. Ice and Fire. I'm sorry. I get this confused.
Major nerd.
So I actually watched all of season one and two of Game of Thrones, and so it's ruined the books for me. And so I'm like pushing my way through. I'm really excited. I hope I can finish the third book before third season comes out, but I doubt that's possible.
Well, I just sort of power read through The Darkest Mind, so that's what was in my head for the last like 3 or 4 days. But I'm actually about halfway through Beautiful Creatures right now too, trying to get that finished before the movie comes out, and that's pretty much all I've been reading for the last week or two.
Well, yeah, I'm like Tarek. I'm always reading like 5 things at least. So I just read The Darkest Minds. I actually just read Miss Peregrine's Hymn for Peculiar Children, and I know I'm like
that book
really
is
late, really late on the bandwagon, but that was amazing. That book was so good.
I totally did not like that book.
Oh, I love
whatever.
That book. It was a little bit sort of predictable towards the end, but I just thought like the way it was constructed was so fascinating. I also recently read Meant to Be by Lauren Merrill, which is like a teen.
It's really cute.
Like, yeah, it's pretty cute. I liked that. And then I have also been reading lots of comic books lately. And I'm about 2/3 of the way through A Clash of Kings, which is the second Song of Ice and Fire book.
Wow, you are reading a lot at once, my friend. Wow. So, Mikhail, what are you reading right now?
I just finished, aside from Darkest Minds, I just finished Finnegan of the Rock by Melina
Marchetta.
Yeah, which I really liked. It was really interesting. Like it felt like one of those books that isn't quite like any other book that you've ever read. And I just started like the first few pages of, what's it called? The Keeper of Lost Cities or something?
Oh, by Shannon Messenger. That is such a great, like, middle grade book. It's really, really fun. And it's so really unique. Good. I love the concept of it. It's about, do you know what it's about? I'm not going to ruin it if I tell you.
Just a girl who's a telepath and a society. That's really all I know so far.
Okay.
Telepaths.
There are creatures in this book that aren't typically in books that are talked about, so I'm going to leave it at that for you. I don't want to ruin it for you.
All right.
I am personally reading Espionage and Etiquette, which is Gail Carriger. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of her. She writes these really fantastic adult books that are kind of steampunk. It's the Parasol Protectorate, and they're amazing. They're really witty and fun and just well thought out. And so this is her first. Espionage and Etiquette is the finishing school for girls, and it's her first YA book. And it's set in the same world as the Parasol Protectorate. And it has these really great, strong female characters and stuff, so I really, really enjoy it. And it's steampunk, which is always really fun to read when it's well done. So I really enjoyed that. I'm trying to think of what else I've been reading. Oh, I just finished, like, a week and a half ago, I literally read a book a night. And it was the Lux series by Jennifer Armentrout. And at first I was like, oh, it's aliens, it's kind of, yeah, whatever. And I read it, and I couldn't stop reading them. They're, like, addictive. They're, like, crack books. You read them and you want the next one and the next one and the next one because they're really, really fast and the characters are really sassy and it's a lot of really fun dialogue. And before you know it, you're done and you're like, but wait, I don't like that ending because it's a huge cliffhanger. And you're like, where's the next book? Because I'm going to need it like now. So that's where I'm stuck right now, is waiting for that next book. But that was a really, really fun series that I never normally would have picked up. And I just happened to pick it up because someone mentioned it to me and it was so worth it. So fun. Anything else you guys are reading or any other books that, like, you can't wait to come out? There's a bunch of stuff coming out. Like, February and March are insane for book releases. I think something like 20 new books came out last week alone. Mm-hmm. Like, literally last Tuesday was, like, 20 brand new books. And they were, most of them were fairly big titles or, like, conclusions to series, which were really cool. So is there anything you guys are looking forward to coming out in the next couple of months that you can't wait to read?
I'm looking forward to reading, I mean, it came out, I think, last week, but I'm looking forward to reading Scarlet by Marissa Meyer.
Oh, yes.
Because I was kind of back and forth on the first one, but in the end, I really kind of liked it. And I like that she's expanding the universe with different characters. And that, like, when I found out that it wasn't all just going to be, you know, Cinder, it's kind of a conglomeration of a bunch of fairy tale characters and their experiences in her, you know, interesting dystopian but different kind of world. That made me a lot more interested in it, so I'm really looking forward to picking that up.
I don't know any books that are coming out, so it's hard for me to look forward to any, but I am looking forward to whatever John Green releases next, because he's like one of my favorite authors.
Yeah, I don't even know if he has anything in the works right now. I think he's working on the movie for The Fault in Our Stars right now. I'm not really sure there's anything. At least it hasn't been announced that he has a next book in the works yet. So you could be waiting a while for that, my friend.
I'm just like looking forward to whatever is mustering in his brain at the moment, I guess.
All right, Karen, what are you looking forward to?
Oh boy, I'm looking forward to a lot of books, but if I had to pick one, I'd probably say House of Hades by Rick Riordan, which isn't actually coming out until October. But that's the follow-up book to Mark of Athena in the next book in the...
Heroes of Olympus?
Yes. Thank you. The next book in that series. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
I'm so excited for that book. I can't wait.
Yeah, he writes some really fantastic stuff. And everyone just from, like, young kid to adult seems to really enjoy it. So it's always good when you have an author out there that can appeal to lots of different audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And does anyone else have any? Is Marama, did you go?
I'm kind of like Tarek. I'm really bad at knowing when stuff is coming out. I don't actually read that much YA fiction. I have to like really specifically pick things up. So there was one, I guess Maureen Johnson has the second book coming out in that Shades of London series.
Yeah, it comes out
series.
Tuesday.
Yeah, and I don't think it comes out in Australia a bit later, I think. But that, I haven't ever read anything of hers before, and I don't know if I would like the other things that she's written. But I did really like that first book, so I'll probably read the next one and see how that goes.
Personally, for me, there's so much coming out that I want to read. I need to like extend the hours of the day or work less. I'm not sure which. But there's some really cool stuff. Like right now, I feel like the genres are switching. Like we had vampires for a really long time, and then we had dystopian for a really long time. We kind of have moved into like the mixed up fairy tale aspects, like with Scarlet and Cinder. And we've also moved into this really cool thing where there are teen assassins and, like, psychological mind games in all the books that are coming out as of late. And one book is actually called Mind Games by Kirsten White. So that book looks really, really cool. And there's another one coming out called Vengeance Bound, and it's about this girl who can control the Furies, and they kind of just go out after people and stuff. It's really, and it kind of like revenge, but with the actual Furies, if you will. So I thought that sounded kind of really cool and just different. I think that's really important, is when books are kind of different and fun that way.
That does sound cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I'm excited about that. Next, we're going to do something a little bit fun where each of you guys is going to pick a topic and talk about what it is in the book world that you like that's going on right now. So I know, Mikhail, you had something that you wanted to talk about specifically that you were just introduced to.
Yeah, I just started watching the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which, if you don't know, it's basically, I guess, the story of Pride and Prejudice told in video blogs by mostly just Elizabeth, or Lizzie, the Elizabeth character, but also other characters. And I have actually never read Pride and Prejudice. So, I mean, I know the story, but I haven't sat down and read the book because I found it really boring when I tried to. And I'm totally hooked, and I'm just like, it's really incredible to me the way that this story, like, that is so classic and, you know, kind of entrenched in its own time, has translated so beautifully to social media and just different takes on characters that somehow make perfect sense. And I'm really impressed by the amount of tension that they managed to kind of manufacture from the story that, again, people usually know. And I did any of you guys follow Such Tweet Sorrow? It was a couple of years ago.
No.
Nope.
Okay, so it was the Royal Shakespeare Company, like, teamed up with this social media group, and they started basically tweeting the story of Romeo and Juliet. So they had, like, four main Twitter accounts, and people were, you know, it was Romeo, Juliet, Nurse, who was in this Juliet's older sister, I think her brother, and maybe one or two, the Friar was in it. And it was really incredible, like, how it played out over a couple of weeks. And, like, I started following it kind of for the gimmick of it, and it was incredible how interesting it was and how, like, unique. And I just kind of have been thinking more about this idea of, like, transferring classic stories into, like, very, very modern contexts. Like, not just an update, not just a high school setting, but, like, in our world, like, day to day. And, yeah, that's just been really interesting for me to think about, and I can't wait until we meet Darcy on the Liz Bennet Diaries, because it's going to be amazing. Assuming that
you're still catching up.
Yeah, no, she just met Fitz.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tease. There is definitely lots of Lizzie Bennet Diary stuff coming to Hyperball very soon. So that will be fun, but you probably won't want to do it and look at it until you've caught up, because it'll be full of spoilers.
Which is funny also, because, like, how could there be spoilers? Because this book's been out for 200 years, but at the same time, it's, you know,
that's true. Kind of want
to preserve the integrity of this storytelling, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and there's been some quite major changes from Pride and Prejudice to Ooh. This adaptation.
Cool.
So, teaser.
Excellent. Does anyone else have a topic they'd like to discuss?
I'm just really excited because the third book in the Finnegan trilogy that you were talking about before, Quintana of Charon, is coming out in America in April, I think, early April, which is really exciting because it came out in Australia at the end of last year. It came out when the casual vacancy did. And I'm looking forward to everyone being able to read it because I thought it was great. And it seems like Australia doesn't get represented on the internet, and I want people to talk about it with. So that's exciting for me.
I have a lot of friends who absolutely love her books. Like, I have a friend who knows someone in Australia that got her to send her the books because she didn't want to wait to read them. So she's got, like this connection where they'll send her books here so that she can get them in advance, and then she'll send things that you guys don't get to her friend. So it's an even exchange so that everyone can kind of get things.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it's okay. Anyway, so yeah, I think she's really good. She is a really great author, and I know lots of American authors that really enjoy her work, and they talk about it frequently on like Twitter and stuff. So that's always really exciting too, to help expand that audience as much as possible. Karen, did you have anything?
Yeah, I don't know if we're still going to talk about our favorite, you know, our books that we can't live without, but mine is The Lost Years of Merlin series by T.A. Barron, and it's actually after about, like, 5+ years of him teasing that, okay, they've picked up the rights for this, it's going to become a movie and whatever, like, it's finally moving forward, and this is sort of old news. I think it came out a couple of months ago, but they're in pre-production right now, and they actually just added Barron on as one of the writers for the script, which is always something to really look forward to when they're adapting a book into a movie. So I'm paying close attention to that because I would love to see those books turned into a whole franchise full of movies.
For me, I guess, I was lucky. On Wednesday, I went to see Beautiful Creatures. I got to go to an advanced screening of it. And can I just tell you guys, whenever a book is adapted into a film, I kind of sit back and I'm like, oh no, oh, it could go either way. And it makes me really, really nervous, especially if I really like the book. And so sitting, watching Beautiful Creatures, I was like, oh, it could go bad. It was actually a really solid adaptation. There are some things that are different, and there are some things that some fans might go, oh, I don't get it. But it was really, really fun. And can I just tell you, Alden Ehrenreich, who's playing Ethan Waite, is fantastic. This is kind of his first really big mainstream movie that's been released, and he is just perfect as Ethan. So if you guys have read Beautiful Creatures, you know that Ethan is the storyteller. He's the one that everything is from his point of view, and so that comes across in the film really, really clearly, and Alden just such a great job portraying that. It made the film really, really enjoyable. So that's something for everyone to look forward to this week when the film comes out.
Wait, so Beautiful Creatures is actually from the point of view of Ethan?
Yes, it's a male perspective. Ah, yeah,
Thank God, all
four stories are from a male point of view.
I'm so happy. Sorry, I've been reading way too many like YA dystopian from a female point of view.
Well,
books,
it's not dystopian; it's casters.
Yeah. Well, but, so I'm even happy that it's not dystopian. So I'm just I'm so excited to read that book.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely from a male point of view. I'll try to come up with some more male perspective stories for you, Tarek. I'll see what I can come up with. There's not a ton.
My brain keeps mixing them up, and I kept mixing up Triss from Divergent with Ruby in Darkest Minds, and it was confusing me.
One dystopian at a time for you, my friend. We need to vary your genres to keep you grounded. All right. And so Karen kind of brought up the book that she can't live without. Does anyone else have a book that they think, no matter how old it is, no matter what genre, adult, young adult, whatever, that you guys just can't live without, that you want to, like, get a copy and hand it to everyone you know and make them read it? Is there one book that does that for you?
Yes, there is. I mean, I guess it's a series, but the Queen's Thief series by Megan Whalen-Turner.
Yes, that's amazing.
It's incredible, and I found it accidentally while I was looking for another book online, and it kind of led me to this series. And it's four books: The Thief, which won the Newbery in '97 or something, and that's slightly younger tilted. And then there's the Queen of Atolia, the King of Atolia, and A Conspiracy of Kings, and I have read them more times than I can count. In like the 5 years since I've found them, and they are beautiful and incredible and amazing, and one of the few romances that I read and feel like these are actual people, and I want them to succeed, not because it's like a team this or team that, but because I genuinely want these people to find happiness in their lives. And they're beautiful books, and I highly, highly, highly recommend them, and I've managed to get maybe two people into them in this time, but I want to spread the news of this series that's been around for ages. That's my spiel.
Excellent.
Yay. well, yeah, I have one. Mine is, I wouldn't necessarily call it young adult or adult. I think it sort of sits in the middle. But it's The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. And it's a Spanish novel that has been translated into English. And it's set in Barcelona during the Civil War, but it's basically about this young boy and how he falls in love with literature. And the entire book is about, it's written from the perspective of the reader. And it's just about like discovering this love of literature and how books can change people's lives. And it's like one of the most beautifully written things, probably the most beautifully written thing I've ever read in my entire life. And I've read a lot of books. And it's a standalone book, but there's also two sort of accompanying novels, I suppose, that have just come out more recently. And they're all translations, but they're done so well. And yes, that is the book I would like to like thrust on everyone and force everyone to read, because I think it is one of those books that is like, so it's so like kitschy to say, but like, oh, it'll change your life. No, seriously, it'll change your life. Read this book. Everyone read it.
I have kind of two books, I guess. Is that cheating?
I'll give you two, just this once.
Mary Muck can attest to me pushing The Night Circus on her. It's one of my favorite books.
That's so good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I absolutely love it so much. It's stunning visually and, like, just plot-wise. I loved it. It's about these two magicians who were born to and raised to fight each other until the death by two separate magicians. And it's kind of like a game. These two magicians are raising these kids to fight each other, and it's something they've been doing for years. And the arena for this time is a circus. And so the point is to create like a more magical circus tent than the other magician. And it's beautiful because like they fall in love with each other, but they don't know that they're fighting each other because they're both at the circus, obviously. And it's just, it's amazing. It's this imagery is stunning, and it's one of my favorite books. And it's set in the 1800s, which is my favorite time period ever. And my second book is actually a book called The Raw Shark Texts. It's a play on words on Rorschach test. It's completely opposite of anything that we've been discussing at all. If you've ever seen the movie Memento, it's kind of like that, about this guy who loses his memory. But before he did, he left himself clues as to who he is and what's going on. And it's about how the mind plays tricks. And it's amazing. So there's that.
Awesome. And I love The Night Circus as well. I'll never forget, I was at BEA when it came out, which is like this big book event, and it was right before it came out, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go pick up this book, because you have to like go wait in line to get things signed and stuff, and the line for her was like insane, and everyone was like, what is this book? And I'm like, well, clearly it's going to be good, because look at the line. And so it was kind of like this precursor to what was to come for that book, and I'm just super excited that it was released, and it was optioned, so I'm really, really hoping that it gets made into a movie, because I think visually it will be the most stunning movie.
Yeah, it's one of those books that if it's made into a movie, if it's done right, it's going to be amazing, and if it's done wrong, it's going to be just like Aragon, and I really hope they don't go there.
Well, Summit Lionsgate holds the rights to it, so hopefully they'll do it right.
To be fair, though, like, those Aragon books were not that good to begin with. But
thank you.
Yeah. So. And you can send the hate mail. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. Marmar and Hyperbole. Yay.
I almost recommended Aragon. Well, I'm glad they didn't do that.
Oh, well, this is awkward. Why? Because it was from a male perspective.
Ouch. Wow. Ouch. Yeah.
No, excellent. I liked it. I liked Aragon, but that's just me.
Karen, is there any book that you... you already told us, didn't you? I totally forgot.
Yeah, but I'll explain it a little bit more, since I didn't really get to talk about it all that much. But The Lost Years of Merlin is a 5-part series about literally like the lost years of Merlin. And it's before he becomes the famous wizard. And he's a young boy and he gets sent to this island called Sinkera. And he learns about his powers and he meets all these people and he falls in love. And it's just like this epic story of him before he becomes the wizard that, you know, we all know about, and before he comes to Earth, because this is totally separate from that. And it's just absolutely amazing and beautifully written, and it's one of those books where like it teaches you a lesson, like there's a moral to the story, but it's so subtle that it's not in your face, like, you know, you're getting slammed with this lesson like you do in school with a lot of books that you read. It's just, it's so beautiful. I read it, like, I can't even tell you how many times, and I would read it, you know, again in a heartbeat. So everyone should definitely go read it because it's awesome. And there's a follow-up series, too, that's set it in a similar world, but it's got a whole different bunch of characters, and that one's really good too, and that's called The Great Tree of Avalon, and that's a 3-part series, so go read
it. I feel like if I ever try reading that series, Karen, I will imagine Colin Morgan as Merlin, always.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
This is true. He is amazing.
Mm-hmm. I do enjoy him. For me, I think I read so many books, it's always hard to decide which one, like, I can't live without, because there's always, like, at least 5 of them at any given time that I'm in love with. There was this book I read ages ago when it first came out, and it's actually an adult book, which is weird, because I don't read a ton of adult novels. And it's called April and Oliver, and it's by Tess Callahan. And it's this really... Every time I read it, all I picture in my head is, like, this really gritty indie movie as I'm reading it. It's about these two characters who are normal people who were friends when they were younger, kind of grew apart. The girl, April, has kind of a traumatic past and doesn't really amount to much. And at the beginning of the story, she loses her brother. And so at the funeral, Oliver, who was once her friend, and his family, who are still kind of friends with her family, come to the funeral and everything. And they kind of reconnect as friends. You know, he has a fiance and stuff. And you can always see kind of how these relationships affect them. And how their relationship as friends has always got an underlying vibe to it. And how, basically, they're both very broken people. And how that relationship develops. And how much farther one has to break than the other. Because they both can't be put back together until they're both completely broken, kind of thing. And it was just this really interesting story about people. And usually I read stories that are, like, high fantasy or have magic or have something like that in them. So when I read this, I think I was a little taken aback about how raw and real it was and just how well done it was. And at the time, I don't think it really got a ton of attention, but it was a book that I just really, really liked. And again, I always have pictured it as this, like, really gritty kind of indie movie. So, yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed that book. And then... I don't know, there's so many other books that I love. I guess there's a lot of books by, like, Sarah Reese Brennan, who is a really fantastic writer. She wrote one of my all-time favorite books called The Demon's Lexicon. And the reason it's one of my favorite books is because as you're reading, you have no idea that you're going to get smacked in the face with this plot twist. At least I didn't, and usually I'm pretty decent at figuring out what's coming up next. And so you get to this one part of the book, and you're just, like, hit over the head, like, how did you miss that? But here it is anyway. And I loved her writing from there on out because she always puts those things in there that you don't necessarily see coming, and they're always really well done, and her characters are always really fleshed out and a lot of fun. So the Demon's Lexicon trilogy is fantastic, and she just started a new series. The first book was called Unspoken, and that just came out late last summer, early fall, and it's a fantastic book as well. And it's, again, really, really witty. It's set in a really cool place in, I think that one's in Ireland. But her books are always really diverse and always really, really fun and really, really character-driven. So that's my pitch. Okay, so now that we kind of covered all that really fun stuff, it's time to get into our overall discussion for the Hypeable Book Club that we ran for The Darkest Minds. And we've all read the book. Some of us only finishing an hour or so ago, Tarek. not that I'm ratting you out or anything like that. So we're just going to jump right into the overall discussion of what we thought of the book. So, in general, what were your first impressions? Spoiler policy is at this point in time, if they're listening, we can spoil. It doesn't matter. Like, I'll put a big old tag on it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, because at this point, we're discussing the book. If you haven't read it, don't listen. So there you go. That's your forewarning, everyone. If you're listening at this point, spoilers will follow from this point forward. We've read the book. We're going to discuss it in detail, including how it ends. And you don't want to be spoiled for that. So if you have not read it, do not listen past this point. Come back once you have read it. Okay, excellent. So What was everyone's
fan of a bunch of iPads turning up?
Yeah, I know. So what was your overall like impression and thoughts about this book? For me personally, I loved this book. And as I explained to you guys earlier, my dirty little secret is I don't really like dystopian novels. Like, they're not my thing. So for me to really, really love and talk about and tell everyone I know about this book was kind of a big deal because it's really not something I typically fall in love with. But I really love the character of Ruby, and I loved the combination of kind of like the X-Men vibe from what the characters could do mixed in with this world that's kind of crumbling and falling apart because they don't know how to handle this mutation of their children. So for me, I really, really loved it. I thought it was really enjoyable. I mean, like with every book, it has a couple of points where I was like, okay, if we could move a little faster and get to the really good stuff, that'd be awesome. But overall, I thought it was really well done and I really enjoyed it. So who wants to go first?
I will.
Of course you will. Go ahead.
So I actually really liked it. I liked it more towards the end and the middle than at the beginning, because when I first started reading it, I kept getting bored and I kept putting it down. I didn't like the beginning very much. It was all right. It was very, when she was in the camp, that's why I kept mixing her up with Triss from Divergent for some reason. Like, I don't know why. But after I had gotten to the point where they met the kids at Walmart and they found the camp and they found the slip kid, that's when things got interesting for me. And I do love all of the characters. The characters are really well developed, I think. Except I feel like we could have gotten more insight into Liam and who he is and what his backstory is, because I feel like he's the only character that we don't really know that much about still. But other than that, I was really, I like the book, and I look forward to the next book, Never Fades. So I look forward to that.
I am kind of not as enthusiastic about this, to be honest. I was totally riveted by the beginning. I thought the parts in the camp, the way the story was set up with kind of the very sinister progression of this disease and I guess the way the political atmosphere would allow for children to be incarcerated and experimented on, that really grabbed me, and I thought that was very vivid and really well done. And I thought the writing was very strong at that point, too. Once we kind of had to focus on Ruby, I got a lot less impressed. I don't really like characters who think that they're inherently bad people when they're clearly not. And it was hard for me to kind of root for Ruby when she kept being like, well, I'm such a bad person. I can't be with anyone and I'm awful. And, you know, it kind of got to a point where it was like, all right, well, let's move on then. Or either that or do something really bad so I don't like you, you know. And I wasn't super keen on the ending either. So I think really the beginning was where my appreciation for this book kind of peaked, and then it kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah, mine was, my experience was sort of similar. I think my main problem was I didn't know it was just like it was going to be a series when I started reading it.
It's always so, a series.
Yeah, exactly, which like is a separate issue that I have with things. But yeah, at the beginning, I think actually I was tweeting you, Mikhail, or something about it, but saying like at the beginning it was great. I was really into it. As it went on, I think the pacing sort of got to me. And Ruby is not like an incredibly likable character, I would say, during the middle part of the book. But there are a couple issues with it that I have that are sort of major things that I think are more about the writing. I think she's sort of written herself into a bit of a corner, especially with the powers that Ruby in particular has. And so I had like major issues with the ending of it, because to me it just seemed like there was a very easy solution to this. Why didn't we just do that? But because we need a second book, that's why we didn't do it. Yeah, so I didn't dislike it. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a cool take on the dystopian thing in a way that hasn't really been done before. But I think I'll probably like the second one more because I'm hoping they'll address some of these issues that sort of seem to be kind of glossed over in this one, because they were setting everything up.
Yeah, I actually agree with you guys about Ruby in that she was just really frustrating for me, how she was so indecisive and she kept saying, you know, I'm such a monster, but it's like, you know, you're trying so hard to be good, like that does not make you a monster. And that for me is really strange because I'm one of those people that like always roots for the main character. I'm really easy to please. Pretty much any book I pick up, I really like it. This book I thought was really good. I did like it. Not one of my favorite books, but it was really unique, and I thought the characters and the dialogue were really realistic, and I love that in books when they can pull that off. But I'm actually the opposite of you guys and more like Tarek in that I didn't particularly like the beginning because I thought it was confusing, and like the whole plot in general could have been a little more cohesive, I thought, but the beginning was confusing. And, like, not a lot was explained, and then, you know, we got to, like, the middle of it, and then all of a sudden we got this huge, like, info dump and all these explanations, and there was this whole chapter about what happened when Ruby took her parents' memories away, and I thought, like, that could have been kind of, like, put into the story a little bit better, but then by the end of the book, like, I couldn't put it down, and I was... I said this in our group, but I was, like, really depressed at the end of the book. It was so sad, but I liked the ending quite a bit, even though it did make me sad, and I'm definitely looking forward to the second one.
You guys talked a little about Ruby's character. There were a pretty decent staple of characters throughout the book, particularly once Ruby leaves camp and joins up with some of the other kids. What were some of your favorite and least favorite characters throughout the story? Are there some characters that you just absolutely loved and wanted more of? Or some that you could have been like, please don't ever put them on the page again?
Chubbs.
Is Chubbs a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
oh, major thumbs up.
Yeah.
This is my favorite part of the book. I really, really enjoyed him. I actually like told myself, like, this kid's walking around with an X on his forehead, and if he gets killed, I'm stopping reading. So I actually stopped at the end, and then I kind of went back and realized, oh, he didn't quite die, so I have to finish. But I really liked him. He seemed to me the most complex character in that his demons were normal, you know, like he misses his parents and he's a little more intelligent than everybody else around him. He's not a crazy genius, but he's got kind of the ability to think kind of more than is helpful sometimes. And I like that he doesn't make friends easily, and I like that he's not Liam, who basically just needs a cape and then he's a superhero. But yeah, no, Tubbs is my favorite character, and to be honest, if he's not in the next book, I'm not sure I'll be reading.
Okay, anyone else with favorite other characters? You're like, so, while you're revising, if we could get a little Chubbs in there.
Yeah.
I have a sneaking suspicion Chubbs is okay. Like,
he better be.
That pisses me off. Yeah. I hope he's not. Yeah.
Okay. Tarek! That's it. Tarek's kicked out of the group.
You are. Send your hate mail.
No, I like Chubbs. And I think he's a great character. He's not my favorite character, because my favorite character is Suzumi, because she's adorable and she's amazing. And the amount of power that she has is fantastic, and I really hope that they reunite in the second book, because I feel like Suzumi under control and, like, with her powers and, like, once she's going to be able to speak, I feel like she's going to be really sassy and amazing, and she was even sassy when she couldn't speak, so that's why she's my favorite. But the reason it's not that I don't like Chubbs, it's just that I feel like if they pull the whole thing where like Chubbs is okay, it can be less interesting to me, because I always, and I don't know why, I always root for character deaths. Game of Thrones is like my favorite book because people always die, and I'm just like, yes, finally.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. They like, yeah, that's not gonna be an
exactly
issue.
Yeah, like an author who's not afraid
to
like
the Hunger Games
kill the characters. Exactly. Yes. It's great. And so, like, I love that emotional response that they get out of the readers when they, like, they kill someone off, just because I don't know why, but I don't know where I've said this. I've said this before, but I'm addicted to, like, that sadness and those sad scenes, like, on Doctor Who and stuff where, like, people, like, have to leave the doctor and everything. It's, I don't know. It's tragic, and I'm weird, and I probably need mental help, but that's why I don't think Chubbs should come back. I think he should stay put, go away, and I feel like that would give them the motivation that they need to, like, fix the whole thing. And sorry for that rant. I apologize.
Okay, so your favorite character is Suzumi. Excellent. She's very enjoyable as a character. For a character who doesn't actually have dialogue, you know, I thought she was really kind of well done in that sense. And you kind of really do feel connected to her. So I get where you're coming from with Suzumi. Karen, did you have a favorite character?
Yeah, I'm kind of stuck in the middle with Chubbs in that I definitely don't want him to die. I think you're horrible for saying that. but I liked him better after he started trusting Ruby. I thought that he sort of came alive a bit more, and, like, I don't know. I felt like that whole antagonistic relationship really slowed the book down a little bit. So then when, you know, he did start trusting her, things just kind of got better from there on in. And I really liked the part when Clancy couldn't get inside of his mind. I thought that was really cool, and he was sort of like the hero with his whole little speech there. That was actually one of my favorite parts of the book. But
yeah,
yeah, okay. But
I'm sorry, I'm totally team Chubb.
Yeah. Other than that, though, I would definitely say, like, Zoo is one of my favorite characters. And I agree that even though she didn't talk at all, like, she was just, I don't know, she just kind of flew off the page for me. I thought she was really great.
Can I say something about Suzumi?
Yes.
I like her. I mean, I don't know if it's possible not to like her. But I kind of, she wasn't really a character for me. Like, I couldn't, like, she was almost too perfect, you know, in that, like, she's this tragic little girl who's incredibly smart and tortured and adorable. And, you know, so it was almost hard for me to connect with her, because I was kind of like, Alexander Bracken, you're taking the easy way out here with her a little bit. In that she was kind of like a little doll, but, like, just did cute things. I don't know. Did anybody else feel like that?
I felt like that with all the characters, actually. Yes. I feel like they all fit really easily into, like, these stereotypical roles. Like, Ruby is like, oh, I'm so sad, but actually I'm, like, really beautiful, and I'm, like, super talented, and, you know, I'm amazing. And Liam was like, yeah, the superhero. Chubbs is, like, the snarky sidekick. And yeah. Suzumi is, like, exactly what you said. I don't necessarily think that's, like, an awful thing. I would really hope that Suzumi comes back in the next book and, like, they break that character down a bit more and explore it a bit more, because I feel like her, maybe more than the other three, like, there was a lot more going on there that was not addressed in this, because, like, she couldn't talk about it. But yeah, I think Chubbs and Suzumi were my favorites as well. Ruby and Liam were, like, just not that interesting to me. I thought they were kind of dull. I don't know if anyone else felt like that, but...
Okay, so Chubbs gets all the thumbs up in the world, and he needs to live, obviously.
Oh, die. Nope, for both clearly not.
And Tara, you're voted off the island, so you don't count right now.
Boy, you don't count.
That's right. So, yeah, I really did enjoy Chubbs and Suzumi. And, I mean, for some, I understand where Ruby was coming from, and some of the self-pity was a little bit much, but at other times, if you're 10 and your family is destroyed and you think you've destroyed them, it's hard to not feel guilty and to feel those things. So I kind of had an understanding of where she was coming from. So, but I don't know. I liked her, but I wasn't like, oh, Ruby. But considering she was telling the story, you have to be kind of in it with her in order to enjoy the story. So you just kind of go with it. This kind of leads into our next question. Is there a character that you guys kind of identified with as you read the book, or... We all know who everyone's favorite was, but did you identify with them at all, or is that just a null question at this point in time?
I feel like I identified most with Liam.
Who would say that?
Just because I feel like I like how we both have the tendency to do something and then feel guilty about it if we do something wrong. Like, that's, I always feel guilty all the time. Like, I don't know. I don't even know. There's... So, I like that about Liam, and I like that he and I tend to make friends really easily. I try to make as many friends as I can, because I'm an only child, so I don't have anyone to, like, chat with when I come home. So when I get home, I just, like, text all my friends. And so that's why I identify with Liam, and he's one of my favorites, but he's not my favorite character, clearly.
I think you're my other half, Tarek, because I feel the exact same way. And now I feel really bad for saying that I identify with Liam since you guys hate him so much. But but no, like, yeah, he's really protective and really loyal. And I feel like I'm that way with my friends, too. And I feel guilty about everything. And, like, I always heap all that burden on my shoulders and everything. And he just really wants to make a difference and do the right thing. And I think that's really important for people to want that. And that's something that I've always wanted to do, too. So I would definitely say that I identify with Liam the most.
Anyone else?
I do identify with Chubbs in that, like, I kind of identify usually with people who aren't, like, the alpha hero. I think I'm more of a, like, practical survivalist in that way. And I kind of like his, like, his attitude in terms of being doom and gloom, but also, like, I mean, he was doom and gloom, but there was possibility that things would be okay, that they would find East River, that, you know, they would deliver these letters. And I like that he's capable of loyalty, which is something that I definitely strive for, but that it's not an easy thing for him. And that seemed very, that really resonated with me.
Oh, now I feel bad. I don't really identify with characters in books. Is that weird to say?
Yes, I think you're a horrible person.
Yeah, I know. I'll see you guys later. I'll just leave. I think maybe my reading experience is different, but when I read something, I like very rarely, like maybe in 3 or 4 books I've read, I've thought, oh, I'm like that character. Otherwise, it's like a very separate experience for me. So, and I just want to say, I don't hate Liam. I just don't think he's like that interesting. I think like, he was a bit too perfect, but I don't hate him. Yeah. I don't hate any of the characters in the book. I prefer Chubbs, but that's all. But yeah. I don't know.
I agree about Liam, by the way. I don't like him, but it's kind of not his fault.
Yeah. I feel like one of the reasons you might've said like he's too perfect is just like, we didn't get to see a lot of background story with him. Like
that's
we didn't, and like, I feel like the second book hopefully will give us more insight. Like, I don't know if she's said what point of view the second book would be, but if she wrote the second point of view from like Liam's story and like forgetting it and coming
boy
back
perspective,
to everyone, that would be
yes.
That would be great.
I'm so hoping for that, Tarek. Like that's on my list because I'm like, this needs to be from his point of view. I think that would be really awesome.
Exactly. So I feel like he's only too perfect because I mean, like, when you meet someone for the first time, you never see any of their faults. Like, you don't, like, you're just looking at them as a, like, if you're looking at a friend that you want to be friends with, you don't notice their faults right away, and you think they're perfect, and feel like Liam's that guy that we just met that we want to get to know, and we want to be his friend, but we haven't learned his faults, all of his faults yet, so.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, let's talk about one of the baddie characters, because there were a couple. We had Kate, who pretends to be very friendly and caring and kind with Ruby in the beginning, helps her escape only to have, like, nefarious plans because they want her because of her power. And then we also have Crazy Clancy, and that's what we will be referring to him as from now on, because he is a little cray-cray, to say the least. And Clancy is none other than the crazy president's son. So, how did you guys feel about Clancy? Because I'm a little... He was absolutely crazy, and I knew from the second he was on the page that there was no good in him. Like, I don't know, you know when you kind of meet a character for the first time and you're just like, yeah, this is not okay. There's something really not right about him, and I definitely had that vibe. Because he had this obsessive, motivations towards Ruby, and I think that's what kind of tipped me off that no good could come of him, because he was obsessed with her. And so, I think he's a frighteningly scary character who still has more damage to do in the future. What do you guys think?
I think he was, like you said, a little too obviously like psycho. I don't know. I think I would have enjoyed it more if there was a bit more ambiguity there, so that you weren't quite sure. So that while Ruby and Liam were having these kinds of arguments about like, no, he's just trying to help me, or no, he's like a crazy nut job, I, as the reader, would not have always been like, yeah, seriously, Ruby, he's a crazy nut job. But, yeah, I think, yeah, he just, like, He's just one of those like crazy villains that I just was waiting for him to be like, here is my master plan. Like, let me explain it all to you so you have time to stop me, like in, you know, bad superhero films or something.
Yeah, but she didn't really have time to stop him. I will give them that. There was no real clear indication what his master plan was until it was too late.
Yeah, that was well done. I did enjoy the way that was put together.
What was the master plan? I still he, was a little puzzled.
He wanted to control the Reds, like, because they kept all the Reds alive because they're useful in war. So he basically took all of the Reds and programmed them to his will so that they follow his orders and nobody else's. So at the end, when they come into the camp, he's expecting it to be the Reds that come in so that he can say, stop fighting us, we're all going to go together and march on New York and take out my father. So basically, Clancy's after total control. He wants to take out his father, who he clearly has daddy issues and wants to get back at him for the way he treated him. So the reality of it is he controlled the Reds and wanted to take them out and march against his father. But they didn't send the Reds when they sent them into the camp. They sent the regular sized soldiers, which resulted in a lot of death. So basically, it's Clancy wanting to get back at his daddy. That's his master plan.
Why did he set up East River?
He set up the East River to gather people that could help him, that would side with him, because he can control them all. Well, most of them. So he set up the East River to pick up the kids with the powers so that he could utilize them. So he's no better than anybody else. He just has a different agenda.
Right. Okay. No, I mean, I guess, like, the kind of thing that struck me was, I mean, first of all, I agree. Like, when Clancy came on screen, it was like, okay, you're bad. We're just waiting for Ruby to realize. But it was kind of, you know, when Ruby kind of drew that equivalency between, like, oh, this is, and Tubbs did it too, you know, this is just like Thurmond. And I'm like, well, you're not starving and you're not being blasted with white noise and you have, like, a place to sleep with people that you like. And I don't know, I guess it was hard for me to see, like I kind of give Clancy a teeny pass, even though he's clearly psycho and I, you know, obviously somebody who can and has no compunction about controlling people with, you know, to do whatever he wants, is a bad egg. But I kind of give him a little pass in that he kind of has been, I guess, put into this situation and, you know, didn't create it. And I guess it's just one way that people respond to the crazy psychosis of what's going on, you know, and the Children's League also, like, I wasn't quite sure why they were so bad other than them being, you know, very militaristic and, you know, like excessive use of force and all that. I was kind of like, well, does this situation need to end or doesn't it? And if it does, and everybody decides that it does, how do we do that when there is a totalitarian government and, you know, mind control and scariness going on? And I kind of thought that Clancy and the Children's League were kind of different ways of ending that. Although maybe not. And, you know, I don't know. I was just a little bit like, Ruby, you don't have any ideas. So what, like, you know, I guess maybe the best idea would be for them to go west to whatever is out there. But I don't know. That's kind of why I was confused.
That was the most beautiful rant.
That's what I do. I just rant. Occasionally beautifully, mostly not.
So does anyone else have any thoughts on Clancy?
I feel like I knew from the second that he was on the page, like, if you're going to get your readers to hate a character most, introduce them by staying the main character's full name. And you're like, wait, what the heck did he just do? Like, what? And from that line, for some reason, I knew that he was just like, oh, he knows her. He wants to use her. This is all way too clear. And I hated every single time she would question herself. Like, is this really what I want? Or is this what he wants me to want? Like, I'm like, come on, you dumb person. Like, wake up. I was going to curse, but I feel like this is not appropriate to curse.
Thank you, Tarek. Thank you.
In the book, actually, there was really the cursing in the book really stuck out to me because at first, like the first third or so, it was very like, "What the?" and "Holy." And there was actually like an S and an M dash, I think, at a certain point. And then it kind of started getting more and more. And by the end, Chubbs's big speech, he's just dropping F-bombs all over the place. And I was kind of wondering if that was like something going on at Hyperion behind the scenes. Like, we can only start cursing at this point because by this point, certain kids will stop reading. And I don't know. I was just wondering that.
No, yeah, it was really weird. It was very odd because there's this scene where like, she says that Chubbs gives Liam the finger, and I'm just like, well, okay, I didn't realize that you were going to go that way, I guess. And then at the end, Chubbs was just like, F this, F you, oh my god. And I'm like, okay.
Well, they're kids, though. Like, it would be weird to me if there wasn't cursing
in the book.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no, the but cursing it, was it did seem to the lack of cursing in the beginning.
Yeah, it did build up, like, a bit strangely. You're probably right. It was probably like, you can only cast after page 175 or something.
Right. So, predictions. Where do you guys think the story is going? We did get the title of book two, which I'm going to loop in here because it's kind of relevant to our predictions. And we know that the story, or that the titles of the three books are going to create a sentence that kind of is the overarching idea of all three stories. So we have The Darkest Minds, and the title of book two is Never Fade. So what do you guys think about the title and you know, where the story may go next, you know, based on what we know right now? Tarek, do you want to start?
Yes, I was just going to say, I feel like the title Never Fade is going to hint exactly to what I think is going to happen. And I saw this from, like, I don't know at what point in the book I saw this coming, but she's going to learn how to bring the memories back. And it's going to be like you can never really fade yourself out completely from someone. Like, she's going to be able to fix Liam and get her parents to remember her. And I feel like this is one of those books that, as much as I don't want it to, it's going to be all sunshine and rainbows at the end, where everyone's going to live all happily ever after, despite how many characters might die, hopefully, maybe. But I feel like it's foreshadowing to the fact that she can't actually fade from everyone's memory.
Okay. Anyone else have any thoughts?
Yeah, that's kind of what I see also, although I'm in terms of de-erasing, unless she and Liam just fall in love again and they're like super, super destined to be together, I don't know. But I'm not sure that it's going to be all sunshine and rainbows, though, because there don't seem to be that many good guys in this equation at all. And I like, especially since we're not at all supposed to like the Children's League. I kind of wonder where the good's going to come from, if it does eventually come. So,
yeah,
I feel like the good guys are going to be on the West Coast, and they're all going to head over to my home state. And
yeah, but then what do they do?
Find like, salvation.
Bomb out New York City.
I don't know, maybe.
I mean, I think the part of the issue is that you have this disease where right now they're not even allowing more children to be born. So, and if they are born, they're taken. So how do you, A, repopulate the country, or the world for that matter, and B, how do you deal with the people who are already kind of infected that have lived? Because they don't let them live freely, so how do you fix that? I mean, I think that's the big question. And like you said, there are an awful lot of villains and not an awful lot of good guys right now. And the villains are all adults who are not infected, who don't really have power, but have an awful lot of guns and other things. So what do you do with that, and how do you survive that? And I think for Ruby, her survival method is to participate with them and yet, you know, take it one day at a time and find a way to destroy them from the inside. I think essentially that's going to be her goal. And I think in the long run, the never fade part is you have Suzumi and you have Chubbs, who both know Ruby, who both know the role that Ruby played in Liam's life. So even though she erased herself from his memory, there are people who know exactly what she was to him and exactly what they were to each other. And so how do you make that go away when you still have people out there who know you? So I think that'll come into play. And then there was also the mention of Liam's brother, who is with the Children's League. Don't forget. So I'm wondering if that kind of circles around and Ruby somehow ends up working with him, and that's how Liam gets brought back in. Just a thought.
Yeah, that actually what you said at the end, that was really interesting. I would really like the second book to deal with the questions that the first one has raised. Like, I want to know why this disease happened, and I want to know why all these people are bad guys, and what have the Children's League done, you know, all of these different things. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. I want to know about the other camps that were set up, and like, are there still people in them, and what's going on with all of them. I'm not so concerned with Ruby and Liam, although I'm sure that will be a big part of the next book. And I agree with Tarek. I think the title is probably talking about like a way to bring back the memories, or a way to help someone remember who you are, like, because maybe it's something that can be suppressed, but it can't be erased, or something like that.
I feel like they have a lot of plot holes in the sense that I think it's only happening in America. So I feel like someone would have run to the United Nations if they know about what's happening in these camps, and they would have been like, hey, you have to like help with this. Because I feel like that's one easy way to solve all their problems, is to get the rest of the world to help with this crisis instead of letting the East Coast just, you know, kill all these kids and
but it's not just the East Coast. Well, it's the whole country. Didn't they lock down all the other countries, lock them down because they didn't want to deal with the president?
Yeah, they all said, oh, we don't want to deal with you anymore. But I feel like it's really weird because it's set to like the West Coast has a separate government that's helping these kids, and the East Coast has a government that's like punishing these kids. And I feel like they just need to kill the East government.
I think I don't think there's going to be like a huge amount of international help coming, because it sort of eliminates the whole dystopian world that they're trying to create. Yeah. I'm sure it will be explained very easily with something like, oh, they think the disease is contagious, so, you know, they've basically locked America down into quarantine, and, you know, that'll be it. They have to deal with their own problems. So, because otherwise it's too easy a fix, you know.
Yeah, it's very true.
So you either can go Hunger Games style and say, oh, sorry, the rest of the world got blown up, or you can say, oh, they're just not dealing with us. So,
yeah, you know, it's interesting, Marma, that you said that you kind of want to know where IAANs came from, because I actually don't. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I really think that that's a strong point, that it's just like, wow, this really bizarre, totally crappy disease just happened, and, you know, it's almost like the Black Plague. Like, nobody experiencing the Black Plague had any idea where it came from or why. It just happened, and they had to deal with it. And I kind of like that idea. Although it is interesting to see, like, presumably people are still having babies. So, like, at what age, like, is this disease stopping to manifest, or are people being born with these abilities, or kind of what's going on with the next generation? Because I don't buy 0% birth rate, but especially if there's not a lot of, like, healthcare going on.
Right. Well, they're making them sign up if they're pregnant, so that they know, like, they have to register their pregnancies and their children. Mm-hmm. So unless there's like a black market that's keeping people safe, then it's really hard, because the government is constantly seeking out people who are having babies. Because clearly the last thing they're going to want is an orange running around loose.
Right. Oh, a little baby orange.
Oh.
Just watch, the disease is going to come from, like, Sesame Street or something. Like, American Sesame Street. And that's why it's only America.
Oh, that can't be good. Does anyone else have any thoughts on the next book, or predictions about where the story is going to go? I guess we can wrap up with, what color would you want to be? Because we know that there's the various colors, they all have various powers. So which color would you want to be, and why?
I feel like this is one of those books where you want to be a color. Like, in Harry Potter, everyone wants to be Gryffindor, but realistically, you're someone else, or you're something else. And I want to be red, just because I feel like that would be kick-ass, but I feel like I'm more of a blue, and just someone who doesn't have, like, that much control and can't change someone that much, but, like, has the ability to just, like, move things, or, like, lift things with my mind. Even though I really want to be a red and kick some butt, but I feel like I'm a blue.
Because I'm such a good reader, I still did not figure out what greens do. What do greens do?
Isn't green like the intelligence one with the numbers or something?
Yes. Ah, okay.
Her friend had a photographic memory, and she was green. Yep.
Okay.
Hey, we're smart. Yeah.
All right. I just thought they happened to be smart, the individuals. Yeah, no, I think I would like to be a blue because I always thought telekinesis was cool.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think I'd like to be blue too, just because, like, you can be proactive with it. It's not like green where, like, they're just super smart and they memorize things. Like, you actually have a power, but it's not super hard to control like yellow, orange, or red is. So I think that'd probably be, like, the easy way out for me.
I can't decide. Sorry. So I'm being really quiet.
It's okay. Is it a toss-up between, like,
decisions?
Two?
I mean, like, either way, you're either, like, killed off or you're imprisoned or you're on the run. So, like, with great power comes really crappy circumstances.
That's going to be the new tagline for the book.
I kind of think, I don't know, I feel like what Tarek said, like, it's like, you know, if you say, oh, I'd be slotted into Gryffindor, even if you think you actually would be, it sounds so cocky if you say it, because everyone else wants to do that. Like, I don't think I would be blue or green, because something about that to me implies, like, that person has, like, very good concentration and, like, a lot of patience, which are not skills that I have. So I feel like I would be one of the ones where you blow stuff up. or I don't know, maybe orange, where you just mess with people's heads. Like, that is quite appealing to me. So
I like it. I think I would like to be orange, to be honest. I know that sounds really weird, but I wouldn't want someone else to be able to get inside my head. So at the very least, if I'm orange, I can keep people out. I don't have to go into anyone else's necessarily, although if necessary, I would. I would just be able to keep them out. So I think that's what would be the big thing for me, is to be able to keep everyone else out of my head.
I agree.
Awesome,
with that.
And keep them out anyway.
What's that?
You could also be Chubbs and thereby be awesome and keep them out anyway.
Well, yeah, but then I'd have to be awesome like Chubbs, and I don't know. Snarky sidekick and all. I don't know if I have it in me, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's the only reason I want Chubbs alive, is to figure out how the hell he did that. That's the only reason. I feel like as soon as he explains how that happens, he can get shot again and I'll be good.
I sort of thought they already did explain it. Like, I think it's just a personality thing. You know, like, to everything, there's always an exception. And so the oranges have to be able to break into everyone's mind, but there has to be an exception because, you know, not everything is perfect. And I think that's just his personality. Like, he's so stubborn. It makes so much sense to me that he's just like, nope, can't get in here. Like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I agree. I saw that too.
Okay, we don't need Chubbs back. It's okay.
Once again, you can send all of your hate mail to Tarek.
I I'm going to back Tarek up on this one. Not because I like people to die, because I'm not a weirdo like Tarek is. I think I would be sort of disappointed if Chubbs comes back, because Liam is obviously going to come back, and I think Suzumi has to come back. So if it's still, like, the four of them running around, I will be like, what was the point of that first book? So something needs to be different for me. So, yeah.
See, I think we might see Suzumi in the next book, but actually, we might see Suzumi kind of... Okay, I'm skipping backwards here, but we might see Suzumi, like, kind of opposed, like, against... whatever Ruby has to do in the Children's League. I wonder, like, that might be an interesting kind of conflict, like, with them. But I don't think we'll see Liam actually in the next book. I think we'll kind of come to realize that Ruby can unerase people, but I don't see Liam being in the next book. Sorry, that was like a rewind to the discussion. Don't kill Chubbs.
Yeah, I agree. And, like, I think that if anybody out of the four of them, I don't want to say should die, because I really don't want any of them to die, but I think it would be more tragic if Suzumi died than if Chubbs did, you know? And I think it'd be sort of like a prim thing, you know what I mean? In that it would just, I mean, it would be horrible, but it would sort of put them on that path of, like, wanting revenge and and finally, like, taking down the bad guys, like, that would be the catalyst for the situation.
I'm saying, like, if it's a Hunger Games scenario, they would then put all the adults in camps, probably, right?
Oh, that would be sad, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of hope we move away from the camps in the next book. I'm always, like, vaguely uncomfortable with things that are sort of emanating concentration camps. And I think they've sort of done that in the first one. So if in the second one there's like a throwaway sentence where it's like, and then the Children League blew up all the camps next, I would be fine with that. That would be okay.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, no, there was very strong Holocaust imagery in the early part of the book. It was a very interesting choice, I thought.
Right, and when I asked her about that, because I did compare them to the Holocaust camps, she said that she was going for more of the internment camps that we had in the United States for the Japanese than the Holocaust camps. Because they weren't meant to be death camps, except for when, you know, they took all the oranges away and got rid of them.
Except when they killed them.
Right, there was that. But other than that, the idea was that it was about fear. And that fear is what generated the camps. And so they were meant to be, you know, somewhat taken care of, but it wasn't as ghastly as the concentration camps.
No, that's interesting, though. I mean, yeah. I mean, it comes to the same thing in terms of the imagery used, I think.
Right, exactly.
No, but when does the next book come out? I forgot.
Okay, this book came out in December, so roughly about the same time next year. So right before Christmas.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Man,
is this so long?
You know, that's how it works.
Is this going to be a trilogy?
It is a trilogy. Yep, there'll be three books. So we know the title of the first one and the second one, and then the title of the third one also kind of feeds into it to make a complete sentence, but we obviously don't know what that is yet. And it will also help kind of tie everything in the three books together.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, so I know, because we held a contest on the site because we got to reveal the title. There was a lot of talk about what the third part could be. A lot of people said things like Into the Oblivion. So, like, the darkest minds never fade into oblivion or something to that effect, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, my favorite one was someone who said From Memory. The darkest minds never fade from memory. I really like that.
Yeah.
I like that, but I don't think I would want a book called From Memory.
Yeah, that's the big thing. You have to get that. Like, Into Oblivion works for the title of a book, kind of.
That's true, yeah.
So that was the thing that you had. There was another one, and of course I can't remember it now, that was really, really good. And I saw it, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. And, of course, I don't remember what it was. So, yeah, so it'll be about December-ish next year that the next book is released.
Okay, that's fine. Gives me enough time to finish Ice and Fire, Fire and Ice, whatever the heck it is.
Yeah, don't worry, we'll have plenty more books for you to read, Tarek. I promise. We'll send you some.
Yes, like Beautiful Creatures. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yes. I think, I don't know if I have an extra copy of that or not. If I do, I'll send it to you.
Wait, so your criteria are boy narrators and...
Death.
Death.
Okay. I'll see what I can do.
It would help a lot if they're hot boy.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to our very first book hype Hypeables podcast all about books and literature. So thank you all for listening to Book Hype, our very first Hypeable book podcast. You can leave us questions, comments, all that sorts of good stuff on any of the book posts. We will gladly respond. You can also follow us on Twitter at Book Hype, and of course you can email Tarek with all of your hate mail.
I welcome it.
Yes, he loves it, just like he likes dead characters. So thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Bye.